Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Welcome back to the Lantern Rouge Cycling Podcast for one of the better classics we've had this season, particularly in the men's race, Brabantse Pijl 2024, starting in Leuven and finishing in Overijse, 195 kilometers long. It's a semi-classic. Yes, it's dot pro, but really this is like, it's like Kerner Brussel Kerner. It's dot pro, but it's world tour level race in my opinion. Even though Ineos and Visma are skipping it this year for some reason. It's a hilly course, not quite as long as the Amstel Gold Race course, but they do laps of like 500 meter, 7% climbs, or 1K 5% climbs, but the Moskestraat features heavily, which is a little bit more difficult, probably the hardest one in the race, 500 meters at 8-9%. Also, it's cobbled. They finish up the Esbocht, which is a 3% nasty false flat drag into the town of Overijse. It's a good race, Benji. Who was the favorite? Bling, I think, was actually the bookie's favorite.
Was he really? Oh, yeah. Actually, I like
think so.
In the past, I think we've seen Kokar win in this race all back in the day. But looking at this parkour and the way it was raced last year, Godon winning last year and going into this year, I felt like the key was in the hands of the Decathlonages there. I was also looking at Dylan Teuns because he was really strong in RVV, for example. Wellens is here, was very strong in the Cobble Classics as well. And were there other riders that you had an eye on before this race going into this?
I just thought it was generally a strong like start list overall. Yeah. I wanted to see how Albanese went, but he didn't have a good race. I wanted to see how even someone like Segert got around the hilly course. Tobias Hallen-Johannessen's here. I think he's been injured or sick. But he really should be like a favorite for this race. He's really punchy. He's a winner of races. But I wanted to see. I was excited against Benji because there just weren't the big guns here.
Yeah,
and that meant we're not going to get it. You're not going to get a 60K solo because they're not here.
Yeah, but also it's the kind of vibe of like if there's one of the big X amount of riders, then it's going to be a long solo. If there's multiple of them, then we might get an actual clash. If there's zero of them, we've got a clash of the people that are not part of the big X amount of riders. And I'd say there's about, maybe this is controversial, but I think there's about big three at the moment. Jonas Vingegaard, Pogacar, and Van der Poel.
And who else?
Well, Remco, Roglic, and Wout van Aert are the other three, but this year I'd say they're not in that top category yet.
Remco is.
So far this year, I can't call that.
Remco's so good. but who knows? Maybe he would have been. Yeah, I mean, he's still got. True, if you want to be in that tier is like if they finish the race, they win it, right? That's the tier you're talking about. Remco finished the race and Jorg beat him in Paris-Nice. So I take what you mean. I'm obviously a Remco believer. But yeah, they're not here. Sort of thank God for once because he was a really, really interesting race. Alpecin maybe had the deepest or most aggressive team with Søren Krah, Laurens, and Van Tricht and Quinten Hermans. But we had a breakaway, Benji. Who was in this breakaway? I must confess I wasn't tuned in at this point.
So Anders Halland-Johannessen, family of Tobias, Lorenzo Manzin, Thomas Kopecky for TDT Unibet, James Whelan for Q36.5, Jens Reinders. I swear, back in the day, there was some rumor in some off-season that he would be joining UAE, and then he didn't, and he joined Bingoal instead or something. I don't know. Nicolas de Beaumarchais exists as well in this breakaway for Cofidis, Alain Rioux for Arkea, and Jordi Warlop for Soudal Quickstep. Now, looking at this breakaway, it's got okay riders, but it's also a breakaway that is being controlled actively by, at first, Decathlonage Désert. They've got, I think, Rasmus Petersen at the front of the peloton. Eventually, Alpecin starts helping and taking over the pacing in full when the hill zone starts getting inside. And when that is happening, Dusan Rajovic makes a bit of a move, right? I didn't see it, but you saw it.
Yeah, on one of these tarmac descents, it's 70Ks to go. It's not that much on. Yeah, they're fighting for a corner, but like it's still 70Ks to go, let's be real. And yeah, he hops up onto the curb and it is a step change. It's not like there is a step level change.
Yeah.
So it's not part of the course. Hops up, moves up position. Also, like he's already kind of at the front. Like I don't know why. And then he tries to swing back in, oversteers or bumps someone, and then almost oversteers back and nearly loses control of his bike and then has to hop back up on the curb. Then there's a sign coming. Has to duck under the sign that's off the course, by the way. He's back on the level change and then goes back onto the peloton. And it's the Masiuk incident was the same thing. Worse because he's literally in the grass and so he had less control. But we have to call out safety incidents, and there's the examples of where riders that Van der Poel said, you know, we're armchair analysts, but it's Van der Poel, Bilbao, they are also saying it's the riders often making the danger.
Yeah.
It's not just when there's a big pileup. There needs to be sanctions when there's not a big pileup. And this could have been Masiuk in RVV 2.0.
Exactly. And it's also, on one end, it is the behavior of the riders, but it's also highlighted by the fact that the UCI doesn't consistently suspend or penalize on these moves. Because I vividly remember that last year, when we were talking about Masiuk, a few days earlier, was it Brugge de Panne or Gent Wevelgem? Vibes goes off the road into also kind of a driveway, basically, and goes back on the road, crashed an entire group that way in the same way as Matyshuk did. So we're looking at the same scenario. Nothing happened in that race when it comes to penalization, while Matyshuk is off out for multiple months suspension by the UCI. So it's inconsistently penalized to the point that it incentivizes riders to keep doing it because they might get away with it.
Arrivage in particular, we've made jokes about it before, but if we're joking about you being dangerous, there's also the reality is like,
yeah,
seeing you do so much shit the last 2 years, it's like, it's ridiculous. And today could have gone worse. But anyway, we move on. I call them Quickstep because they are the new Quickstep. Albertsen de Koenig. They're in my mind, they're like the dominant classics team now. Breakaway gets caught and Alpecin start jumping. Søren Krah, Quinten Hermans, they're trying to get into moves, trying to split the race. And that makes sense because they probably have the deepest three leaders in the race, in that Laurence, Krah, Anderson, and Hermans all could win this race. And so they want to basically get two of them or three of them in a group of 10 or so. And they eventually do get that Benji with around 45Ks to go.
Yeah, and I feel like throughout this like phase from 70 to 45 kilometers to go, it's not just Alpecin, but it's absolute chaos with counterattacks and attacks and attacks everywhere. Once that breakaway got caught, even just before that, we just had attacks everywhere. And the two sides of the story were the attackers, including Alpecin, and on the other side, EF trying to keep everything together for Marijn van den Berg. That was the two sides of the storyline for me. And at this point, the attacks were kind of winning, is how I felt it. And I think the Moskva start at 50K to go, what was the first one where a group started being created. I think it was Morgado that led out Wellens on the Moskva start, pure mustache style to the top, 15-man group over the top, bit of a split in there, but eventually it comes, well, you've got some group that is ahead, but the others then get closer, and I don't know, it's like nothing truly gets away until that move that you just pointed at, which is at 45 kilometers to go, Laurence bridging towards some leftovers of moves from earlier. And we've got a move that includes Laurence, De Poorter, Ubi, Antoine Ubi from Soudal Quickstep, Frank van den Broek of DSM, Lawson Craddock, who seemed to be on the wheels more than he was actually contributing because he has Matthews behind, Morgado in there, Alex Segar from Lotto, but he seemed to be suffering there, Andreas Leknesund in there, and eventually we see the bridging of Krah Andersen and Kosnefra, but go ahead.
I had a dream, maybe a nightmare. It's just so strange, but someone's got to do an analysis of this. It was last night, and I forgot until I saw him in the notes, Leknesund. Yeah. I had a dream that I was doing Pilates or yoga or something, and that Leknesund, for some reason, then put like his tail down next to me and then was like, then just like bashing me. Like when he was doing Pilates. Leknesund too. Not random like so, it was Leknesund.
Why? How?
I haven't thought about the guy since the Giro last year. It makes no sense. Like what is going on? I have no animosity to him. I've never interacted with the man. Seriously, that happened. I only remember now because he's in the notes. I would have forgotten forever. But
and I don't know how
we. Then we like started scrapping. I started fighting. So I don't. Yeah, very very strange stuff. But maybe that spurred him on to get in the break today.
Anyway, that group is ahead. They go towards the.
I'm not making it up.
I just can't. I can't. Sorry, but what the fuck is that story? Okay, that was the dream section of today's podcast. On to the actual factual race situation. 40Ks to go. Esbocht Alvarez is here. That group is still ahead, but the riders are kind of suffering in there. Some of them, at least, some are looking good still. 14 seconds roughly is the gap. Yev is still pacing in the peloton, but we see a bridge from the peloton to the front. I think it's Steven Williams that, honestly, easily bridges to the front. He needs one Esbocht straight at the front. And I feel like we saw that a lot today, and I feel like some teams were kind of getting played with. As in, for example, 35k to go, Lotto is hard pacing in the peloton on the climb itself for Kroon to try and do something after the climb. But reality is he is ahead at the top, like a few meters, but then he can't, because he did the effort on the climb itself, he can't make the bridge towards the front then.
Yeah.
And then he starts riding with the group to try and get to the front, but everybody else starts just going from that group and bridging towards the front in one go, because they didn't do those efforts on the climbs at the front. So it's as if bridging works way better than trying to help the group get closer for everybody, for every individual person here. And
we saw that later too with Bling.
Yeah, that's true. Bling got played in the same fashion. And I feel like it all came around and it all came together towards the Moskestrade again. Because the Moskestrade is really that hard hitter you mention every single time. And we're looking at 30 kilometers to go at that Moskestrade, and Yoi's lining it up. Peloton, that's the situation at the moment. It's just a peloton with Yoi lining it up. It's, I think, Paulit pacing for Wellens. And Turns is in the wheel. And Turns launches past Wellens, past Paulit, straight ahead. And there's only two riders that can follow on this Moskestrade. It's Tim Wellens and it's Marijn van den Bergen. Is it me or did I not expect Marijn van den Bergen to follow us? Yes, he's been fucking good the last few races in sprints and reduced sprints, but getting with these two riders over the Moskestrade after such a brutal move by Turns, who was putting Wellens in trouble on this climb, was that, for me, that was shocking, no? That he was there?
Yeah, a little bit surprising. I'm trying to look, like, he won some French races, like a hilly race ahead of Benoit and Venturini in last week, Région Pays de la Loire. I got to say, I didn't watch it. He won in Catalunya, of course, but that really was the easy sprint day. But he's definitely in better shape this year, and he's actually one of EF's winners. Like, he's won four races this year, won three races last year, and he's 24, out of contract, Dutch. So he's certainly putting, yep. Today he was certainly a big statement that he's not just like a Catalunya reduced sort of misc sprinter or a Romandy sprinter. He can race in a one day and follow uphill. So did he do that, Clay? He didn't do. He did the Tour of Flanders, came 54th. In hindsight, Benji, I don't remember EF apart from Bettiol doing anything in the other races.
Brunner and Abraham.
Yeah. Omloop. You know who came? Mayus came top 10 or something. Like, it all came back together. So, in hindsight, 2020, of course, but he should have been in their classics team if this is his shape. But maybe at Amstel, he'd do even better. I think that Amstel is actually a bit harder, though. Anyway, we'll kind of cut to, it's the status quo now. Hubie tries to change his bike. Oh, yes?
We got to talk about that. The bike change of Hubie, because he's behind the peloton group with about 30K to go. We go into this corner, a 90-degree left-hand corner. Peloton goes in there, and he jumps off the bike. He takes a bike that's already stationary by the side and just keeps going. First thought in my head was, that was a very quick, very crazy bike change, because that wasn't like snap and he was on a new bike. My second thought was Luke talking to me telepathically and saying, that's not allowed. That should be disqualified. Because isn't that what Ghana did in Provence or Bessèges 2 years
ago? Provence before Montagne de Loire, even might have been before the a mountaintop finish. He changed from the aero bike. Actually, no, he must have had a flat because Ineos, the Pinarello's one bike. No, they never had an aero bike and a climbing bike. Why did Ganna change? Luke will know. He says he changed to rim brakes. Holy shit.
Is that real or are you joking, Luke?
No, no, he changed to rim brakes. Otherwise, why else would you change?
Yeah,
they don't have an R5 and an S5 like Cervelo.
Yeah.
So that, anyway, that is funny. Flashback. Any rim brakes, save them. But poor Antoine Hubert gets disqualified.
Well,
do I care?
Did he?
He should have.
Well, I meant to talk about disqualified in the notes. I didn't mean he got disqualified. He probably should have been, but I don't care.
I actually don't care about that rule. I really think it's okay. I don't really mind. Like, if it's safe to do so, I don't see the problem with it. It's safer than a mechanic leaning out the car trying to fix your derailleur on the
which
flight.
Is also not allowed.
Also not allowed, but we saw people still see it occasionally, unfortunately. Because Israel are not in the group of Vandenberg, Turns, and Velens, they're chasing. Israel is Turns, not Israel. Alpecin. Because Alpecin are not in the group of three, they missed out. They're chasing. Søren Krah doing massive pulls. There's Hermans not pulling. So they don't pull with Hermans. Hermans is their real protected rider. Jayco, Bling is pulling. And I don't know if it was Blackmore or I need to check if it was someone else for Israel. Blackmore really looks like Schultz. I think it was Blackmore who was messing up the chase. And Blackmore was just sitting there. He's being so annoying. And you're always rolling through, stopping. Eventually, Decathlon before an important climb, Decathlon just line it out for Benoit with coming up to 11Ks to go. They'd already done the Mosca strut, by the way, and MVDP actually looked really, really strong. He had Turns and Wellens on a gap. Herman's...
MVDB, right? Van den Berg, yeah?
Yeah, same guy. He looked like MVDP today. Herman's used the Mosca strut, the last one, to bridge across that group, and now it's panic stations for that Bling because the team that was just chasing is now represented ahead. And then Decathlon realized that too. On the Holstader, they basically launch Cosnefroy and he gets across there quick smart. He or she's disrupting group two. But now for Israel and EF and the other teams, they're like, oh, well, we don't really have a big advantage now. No one has multiple numbers in the group ahead. Vandenberg's probably the quickest sprinter or Benoit. So Wellens and Turns are not just pulling super hard. So it's still bridgeable. And we see Cepeda flying across as well as Joseph Blackmore going across to that move, who's the only rider from a team that was already represented. So the final group, Wellens, Turns, Blackmore, two teammates, Cepeda on Caja, Cosnefroy, who's probably got the best sprint, Hermans, and Marijn Vandenberg, and no Bling. So Bling misses it after pacing. And now with that group, Engie, I didn't think that group would get caught, but I also didn't know exactly how they'd play it.
Yeah, me neither, because on paper, Marijn Vandenberg is the fastest on a flat sprint. Is that the same once you have to sprint up the Isbocht in Overijse? I don't know if that's going to be the same. He's been pretty good on uphill sprints every now and then as well, so that exists. Turns a pure sprint is not great, so will Israel start rolling attacks on the group with Blackmore and Turns? Is that a possibility? Cepeda just bridged. I don't know what a sprint is like. I have no clue what he's going to do. So that exists. Cosnefroy, pretty fucking fast. He can afford to wait for the final sprint. I'm looking at this group and there's so many potential scenarios, but the one scenario I didn't expect happens. Just bring us back to 2 years ago. Once there was a group ahead with Sheffield involved. Sheffield goes to the front and nobody takes his wheel and he rides off into the distance. And today exactly the same happens. We see Marijn Vandenberg going to the front of the group. Cepeda does not take his wheel but goes off the front skipping the turn for some reason. And Vandenberg rides off into the distance for a bit. And then I was thinking, okay, there's still Blackmore, there's still Turns. Who's the best rider on this finish, do you think? Without knowing their history. Well, without knowing their history.
Blackmore.
Without knowing, you can't do anything. Okay.
Blackmore or Benoit? Not including Vandenberg because he's up the road?
Yeah.
Well, it'd be Blackmore, Vandenberg, and Benoit. But just a note on who Blackmore is, because, Dylan Turns, he's like, to Dylan Turns, Blackmore's is an Australian health supplement company. Yeah. Like, he don't know who he is. They've never met each other. And then, oh, I don't know that, but he's on the Conti team, this guy. He's a 21-year-old Brit. And like after the race, I think one of the riders was like, yeah, Stevie Williams was real good in that group. It wasn't Stevie Williams. It was Joseph Blackmore. And this guy, right? So I got to give credit to Athers in the LR Discord. He's been on this guy for saying how good he is for a year. Apparently, like his first ever road race was Tour de Rwanda in 23. A bit of like a late starter for U23s. He came sixth, including second on the Kigali stage. No team, by the way. He was on run for the British team there. Then Orleans Nation Grand Prix, another U23 race. He topped 10 straight away, second road race. And then L'Avenir, 12th, including like decent enough results in some of the mountain stages, but not a pure climber, more of a puncher. And still no World Tour contract, fair enough, but Israel gave him a and credit to Israel, they gave him a one-year U23 contract on the, on the development team. He went to Rwanda this year, won, and that's ahead of like Le Cerf, who, by the way, Le Cerf uphill was very good this year.
Yep.
Won Taiwan, ahead of like professional riders like Gate and co. And then eighth in the Volta NXT Classic, which is like a serious race. That's where Kielich won, and he was good in Roubaix. And the Circuit des Ardennes, he beat Timon Graat, and in one of the sprints, he beat fucking Paul Manier. He beat Paul Manier in a sprint last week, or three days ago he beat him. So, but does Dylan Turns know that? Paul Manier, by the way, is the kid that on Quickstep just absolutely obliterated everybody on an uphill kick in Oman. He's apparently like beating Merlier in Townsend sprints. So he beat him in a sprint on Sunday. But does the Israel car know that, Benji, or Turns?
I don't know, because we see Blackmore pacing for Turns. And with the results I've seen from Blackmore this year, I would have had him do the sprint, because I don't trust Turns in the sprint versus Cosnefroid. So either you roll attacks with both, or if you go for the sprint for Blackmore for me, which is, it's against the logical hierarchy. Turns is going into the Ardennes Classic as their all-out leader. So I think the team is just so around Turns that they, people management-wise, didn't make that decision, while I think Blackmore should have been a decision here.
I'm not going to say, oh, you got to go for Blackmore on the sprint, because in reality, like, it is still a 200k dot pro race against serious guys. He might be fucked. It's not doing some U23 sprint against the U23s. So I'm not going to say, you're idiots for not going for Blackmore on the sprint. But against Benoit and against Vandenberg, what's the probability Turns wins the sprint head-to-head with just a normal lead out? It's not that good. Cosnefroid is a nasty sprinter in these groups uphill, really nasty. He won in Albemarle team. He's really, really strong. So in that sense, you're the only team with numbers, Benji. You have to play Blackmore or Turns. And they sort of half did it. They without fully committing to it, they let the wheel go, you close it. And that created the situation where Vandenberg went up the road. And now you have the opposite of what you want. Instead of Blackmore being up the road, you have Blackmore being forced, because you're the only team with two riders, to chase Vandenberg. And now it's basically everyone's getting the equivalent benefit as well as Turns. And he does that. He does that so strongly. He brings back Vandenberg, who I thought was gone for good. If Blackmore wasn't so good, then Vandenberg wins, does the lead out, and then Turns jumps. Good timing from Turns. He did time it really well, up the barriers very nicely, but Benoit's in his wheel. Turns opens up the gap. It doesn't matter if he did or not, and Benoit comes out like a rocket and just obliterates everybody in this sprint. Turns coming second, Velen's third. Blackmore comes fourth despite pulling ahead of Cepeda and Hermans, who were in his wheel for the last K and a half. Vandenberg got caught, loses 10 seconds.
Yeah, it's as simple as that, to be honest. I look at Vandenberg being caught and I see he probably thinks he made a mistake right now. But if Vandenberg finished and said in his interview, I maybe made a mistake by continuing that action, but it's also not that he attacked and full-on decided to attack the group. He was a stronger sprinter on paper in the group, so he just went with the gap he was given. And I won't tactically roast him over that. Yes, on paper, his sprint would have been a better option, but the situation was kind of given to him, so he went with it. He gets caught, and we get that sprint like you mentioned. And Cosnefroid eventually out-sprinting Turns. Not shocking to me, Cosnefroid winning from this group in a sprint. Not shocking to me, Hedemans just falling through the group. I didn't expect it, but it was just empty. Quinton Hermans here. So he just didn't have it anymore. And I don't know, like, this was a really good race, by the way. Like, this was better than RVV and Roubaix combined.
Yeah, the last 30Ks or 20Ks, you want to watch this? Really exciting race. It's always a good race. I really like this race. It's a shame Ineos and Visma didn't do it, to be honest. But maybe it's a good thing because then...
Maybe they would have ruined it.
Yeah, other people get to shine. But... What was I gonna say? On the Vandenberg thing, it's like...
Yeah?
If someone gives you 100 meters for free... And group two syndrome can take over, and there's an Israel Conti rider in the team, and you got to ride against him in the group behind. He well could have won, Benji.
Exactly.
Could have won. But now he's looking at it like, yeah, if he stays in the group, he podiums for sure. Yeah. Like in the sprint, he probably comes second at worst. So now he's like, yeah, it was a mistake.
He shouldn't blame himself over it. That's how I see it. And then the situation we also have is. Turns is second, Blackmore is fourth, but did you already mention that his points don't count for IPT in this podcast?
They don't count, because if you're on the Conti team, even though you race up, they don't count to the relevant World Tour team. So he now has 500 just about UCI points, and we're halfway through April. He could be a 1,000 point scorer as well, because they're a pro team. If he was in the pro team, he can still race up and down in the pro and the related Conti team if he was in the pro team, but they can't. Luke and you say he can't be moved up because they're at the full complement of riders.
Yep, they are at the full complement of riders, 30 riders. In the past, there were rules that allowed you to go up to 32 in some sort of structure during COVID, because then we were talking about, okay, these riders are out of contract, let's get them in the team during COVID, during the more difficult time. And right now it's 30 riders again in the stagiaire period. That's going to be different. You can have more than 30 then, which whatever points he's scoring now will be completely irrelevant if they find a way to fire someone from the World Tour team and have Blackmore join. Obviously, you can't just ditch a rider to your dev team without like a proper reason for it. So I don't see that happening. So I think he's stuck in their dev team for the year. So I think his points are not going to count for... Israel Premier Tech at this race. So that's a bummer. And at all the other races as well this year. And by the way, I need to mention...
they don't count. Even if they moved him up tomorrow, the points today don't count.
Exactly. I need to mention, yesterday or in our previous podcast, you were talking about the famous leader of Bahrain, Buratti, Nicolò Buratti. You unironically just predicted his best race of the season. He got 18th.
See, I knew that. Who is he again?
He's the guy that you thought was Misato.
Dude. He done nothing all year. Nah, actually, that's not true. I for some reason, I remember he was okay in like Crow Race or something, because I always cover that race. But okay, good on him. 22. All right. And which is the one on Busato?
Busato 28th.
Busato, okay, so he beat the Intermarché guy who came fourth in the Volta NXT, the Volta Limburg.
Yeah.
Okay, fair enough. I should probably go through the top 10. Yeah, Cosenfroy wins ahead of Turns, Wellens, Blackmore fourth, Cepeda. That's still a nice result for Kaha, fifth in a Dot Pro one-day race. Herman sixth, Vandenberg seventh, Matthews won the sprint behind. Eighth, Vitor Breit.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
9th, Corbin Strong, 10th. So three Israel riders in the top 10. And that was a pretty large group. And yeah, as you said, Benji, they can't, unless they move a rider off the team Israel, they can't put Blackmore on there. And he also can't do World Tour races. And so like he could win a Giro stage.
Yeah.
Or
he could be their Derek G.
But I don't. Luke will correct me if I'm wrong, but he can't do world tour races with the team. So he can't do Amstel this weekend. I don't know how it works. If they're a world tour team, he definitely couldn't. I don't know how it works with the pro team, but I think he can't do them. He can't do world tour races as a Conti rider. So yeah, they might want to sort that out. And listen, some team got to get that guy.
Question as well. What does today learn you for the upcoming classics? Because I feel like my thoughts towards Amstel don't necessarily change. Turns was as strong as I expected. I'm expecting him to be very strong at Flesh Wallon. Was this the year where they put another Mudo Hui in Flesh Wallon, or was it a women's race?
Ooh, I can't remember. I don't know.
I can't remember either. Because I'm looking at the star list, and obviously we've got Dylan Turns there, but I'm looking at other teams, and I'm like, okay. I kind of feel that like this is a Dylan Turns special coming on next Wednesday. Because he looks so fucking strong right now.
And Poggi's not doing it. Remco's not doing it. Roglic not doing it. Maybe. Probably not. So, could again
I reckon Laurence would be good at Flesh.
Yeah. Who else is punching well? Joseph Blackmore's pretty good. Yeah, Turns and Israel, he'll be trying to win that. And they need those points, or they need the big results. Anyway, I didn't learn too much, Benji, apart from Benoit's in really, really good shape with his kick, but we'll see how he goes in Amstel. I think Liège is still a bridge too far for Benoit because the climbs go over 2 minutes. The women's race in Brabant-Chapelle, 135 kilometers, same finish in Alvarez up the S-Box, still with the Mosca Strat repetitions. I think they do four of them. And they start in St. Quentin's Lennec. And... yeah. Again, she is trolling me. I don't know if she was on the provisional. Maybe she was, but Elisa Longo Borghini, I swear I was just like, oh, she was? Okay.
Yeah.
She's because I picked her for Roubaix and then she wasn't on the list. And
yeah,
then she
you've
comes
got
here.
Roubaix PTSD.
Yeah. Elisa Longo Borghini, she's, yeah. She was here. So it was her and Vollering were the two co-favorites. But again, Benji, there's another breakaway that went decently far into the race.
Yeah, exactly. Emily Watt, Chevalmere. So Chevalmere is their team. Corinne Lebecki from EF. Karin Söderqvist from Life Plus Wahoo. And Laura Molinar from Volker Wessels. This was the earlier breakaway, I would say, from like 100-ish case to go. They went out. But I'd say that the real action started trickling in the last 40 kilometers. We've got just before the S-Bocht Overeiser, once again, one of the S-Bochts. We've got two riders bridging towards the breakaway. Alessia Vigilia from FDJ. And Sofia Bertizzolo from UAE ADQ. And then the next action happens on the Mosca Strat, 32 kilometers to go. We get to that climb, the same climb where the men's were opening up, where the women's are now going to open up. And in the breakaway, Söderqvist is dropping. But in the peloton behind, which the gap is still existing, but it's starting to become relatively bridgeable. So if someone goes on this Mosca Strat, it means that they'll be within reach of catching the breakaway fairly soon after. And that's exactly what triggers Little Trek to hammer it on this Mosca Strat. Little Trek does a lead out into it. ELB tries to do a bit of an attack, some kind of like harder than hard pacing attack, if that makes sense. And Vollering's in the wheel. Vollering looks good in the wheel. It's still okay. And on those climbs, Vollering halfway through goes past ELB and keeps pushing towards the top, which then splits it. We've got two riders out the front. That is Vollering and Elisa Longo Borghini. And they're just a two-women group going off the front of the peloton at this point. Then over the top, the gap is not huge, but they keep on rolling together because they know, okay, we're both going to go ride. We're both going to keep on riding here. We want to split, want to drop all the honors, and they keep that going. Holstheide is the next climb. Vollering and Longo Borghini basically catch and drop the Söderqvist rider who was in the breakaway and then wasn't in the breakaway, and they both joined the breakaway. So Vollering, ELB, joined the breakaway, and this brings us to be clear, the peloton is still within reach. We see Mavi Garcia just behind, facing the group, but then realizing there's an SD Works rider in her wheel. So then she's like, I don't really want to close it for an SD Works rider in the wheel. And the gap stays existent until 22 kilometers to go. S-Bocht Overeiser once again. And it's one of the coolest looking attacks ever. Because like, Patrick, this S-Bocht, by the way, I just think it looks very cool. They need to do drone shots.
Yeah.
Heli shots, drone shots on the S-Bocht because the peloton's not far behind. Vollering realizes that, gets to the front, starts motoring up this bloody climb and just breaks this breakaway rider by rider. They start crumbling out of this group, and we get a situation where it's just Follering, ELB, and Alessia Vigilia, who is half dropped, half holding on towards the top. And it was like a sprint from Follering in the saddle towards the top of this climb, and that's probably the best shot of this race. Unironically, that was the best shot. And at this point, I kind of gave up on the peloton because the gap was back to 20 seconds. Gigante is just pacing at the front of the group as hard as possible on these climbs, and she looks empty, but she kind of always looks empty when she's going full on hard. She gets no help from other teams, and I don't know. What is your take when you're seeing these two riders at the front going into the headstart with a 30 second gap while I'm trying to get my cable in because my laptop's going to die?
Well, you've got two strongest teams and the two best riders represented. So as you said, like, the group behind is not coming back unless they can find a domestique that can pace as hard as ELB and Follering swapping off. And then what we saw last year in Liège, it's a very similar situation, and it's so cool to have seen it now in advance of that race. But if you don't remember, last year there was Follering and Olisa Longaborghini together, and I think Follering was the strongest. I can't remember. I think it was Rochelle Faucon where Follering went, and maybe ELB was in her wheel. But in the end, ELB didn't have the legs to attack her, let alone outsprint her. And so it was actually ended up being a formality, kind of like the Strada finish.
Yeah.
And so I was keen to see, because ELB looks in unbelievable shape.
Yeah.
Like, I still think she could have won Roubaix. And how would she do something different than what happened in Liège last year?
Yeah, she probably would. And the thing with Liège as well is that she might not have had it to really attack Follering anymore, because Follering was on another level in the Ardennes last year. But here we go towards the Herstart, and gap was 25-30 seconds. Follering hammering the tempo, ELB following. Vigilia, keep it up. Like, she was holding the wheel behind against Sara Gigante trying something, but UAE ADQ starts spacing them behind in the group, and they're just neutralizing each other, basically. But you said it, something was going to happen. We're looking at it. Moskestrad holds head, a combination coming with 11k to go. Moskestrad, Demi Follering is hard pacing. Vigilia drops off the wheel. There's now two riders at the front. They're going to fight it out for the stage, for the race, for Kuna, not for Kuna, Brussels, Kuna. The fuck? I'm at the wrong race.
Wrong dot pro.
ELB passes Follering, starts hard pacing, and at that point, when I saw ELB taking over from Follering and half-wheeling her, I kind of had the vibe of, okay, ELB can win this, ELB can drop her, but it didn't happen on this climb. Follering stayed on the wheel. It was on the next climb, Holsthead, 7 kilometers to go, that we do see a move. And Holsthead is not cobbled, so we've got this climb that is just happening, and Follering is pacing, and ELB just attacks from her wheel, and the separation was there initially already. Follering tries to close it, but just couldn't. As simple as that. And the gap just gradually keeps growing. And I don't know, man. Like, she just didn't have it to beat ELB. He was better today. As simple as that. Does that worry you for the upcoming 2-3 races for Follering?
I mean, for Amstel, it's on Sunday, right? So, yeah. I mean, Follering did do a lot of work, it seems, beforehand, and she was really trying to make the race. So maybe it's good that she got a reality check here, that you can't just hard pace with ELB on the wheel and think you're just going to win, like Liège last year. Maybe that's good. But in terms of improving your legs until Sunday and then flesh on Wednesday, and then flesh, you'll still probably be the best, but then Liège on the next Sunday. As I said, Trek look very, very good. I hope Van Anroy comes back in because she was here, and so she'll presumably be doing all those races. So it's a nasty team, and she came fifth here as well, Van Anroy behind. So
yeah,
I think Trek are the team to beat, honestly. Is Kopecky doing the Ardennes?
She was set to be doing LBL. She was set to be doing Amstel. So I'm expecting her to beat her unless something happens between now and then. But I'm very curious how that combination is going to work out. Yes, but I'm also like, with Reusser out, will Kopecky be co-leader? Probably.
Yeah, I mean, you got to bring her in, because it looks like Follering, I don't know if Fisher Black will do EA. She'll be a good added bonus. But
yeah,
and listen, Femke Heritzer was good too. She came fourth in this race. So yeah, did you say Elise Longaborghini win solo? Did you say the gap?
What's right? No, I didn't.
41 seconds. So not a small gap at all. Was much more strong in the end. Manly third, won the bunch from behind for Livalula. Jayco 106 back. Femke Heritzer, who's on the SD Works team, who's quite young. Then Vananroy fifth, Umbercrack sixth, Chiabocco seventh, Justin Hekira. Jeez, that's a tough one for me. Yara Kastelein, and now an even tougher one. Margot van Pachtenbeke for Volker Vessels.
She did it. She was pretty good.
You called her out yesterday, I think.
Yeah. And the reason is that last year, she was in the group with Vollering and Royakkers in Brabantsappel. When she wasn't riding for... Well, what was she riding for? I don't even... Parkhotel, Valkenburg.
Parkhotel, yeah.
So same team. Volker Vessels
is Parkhotel. Why is she not on a World Tour team?
Her results overall aren't consistent enough.
There's also a lot of World Tour riders...
Yeah, fair.
...in Women's World Tour who don't have regular top tens in...
Yeah.
In these races.
I don't know, man. Pull some strings. 25.
John Volker Vessel's still 20 into 25, it seems.
Yeah.
According to
PCS. Volker Vessel seems like a team that wants to move up in some fashion, I would say. Because they took over Parkhotel Valkenburg to have that presence in the women's peloton. I swear they're like a Conti team that had like riders like Koen Vermeldvoort and so forth or something in the men's side. So they're kind of vibing in the men's side as well, but less known. But hey, I admire teams that step up on the women's side and also have ambitions there that might be bigger than their men's equivalent side. But anyway, like you said, ELB wins with 41 seconds, but I do feel like that doesn't represent the actual strength difference between them. Yes, ELB was better, but as usual, in every single race that happens these days, the solo rider ahead tends to have a bit of a moto pacing gain, which was once again present here as well in this race. So the 41 seconds won't define much, but she's better than Vollering today.
Did it change anything for you? You asked me that, Benji, but does it change anything for you for the upcoming Ardennes?
Well, I thought Vollering would clean the Ardennes, but I've...
I don't feel that way now.
She didn't clean the Ardennes because she lost today.
this one doesn't count to the triple though. That's Fleschli Age Amstel.
Yes, but this is the starter. And if the starter does not sit well, I'm not happy with it.
Yeah.
So ELB looks very strong. It's gonna be closer than I hoped for, which is good.
She lost this last year, albeit in a sprint to Persico.
Really? I don't remember this race at all.
And then what was the year she got nailed on the line by Ruth Winder? No, it was Ruth Edwards.
2021?
Yeah, Ruth Edwards beat her, nailed her in a sprint of a small group. I remember, yeah, 2021.
Yeah, it's a name change, right? Ruth Winder to Ruth Edwards? Because I swear it was Ruth Winder back in the day.
Oh, yeah, I was feeling bad. I felt like I thought I got that wrong, but... Okay, she's a name change. Fair enough. So
it was American champion back then, I think, if I recall correctly.
Now Ruth Edwards, nay, Ruth Winder. Yeah, I agree. But SD Works got to do something, Benji.
Yeah, which is good.
They got to do something. But I'm happy. I'm now more hyped for the other end. Is there any other news around the traps? There was the Giro d'Abruzzo, which is the Giro di Sicilia. Which couldn't go ahead this year, and so they moved it to the middle of Italy.
On the topic of Giro Abruzzo and Women's Brabantsappel, can I tell you the story about the coverage of the Women's Brabantsappel in Belgium? It's not on TV here. The rights are with Proximus, who posted on a live stream on the internet, and have like a paywall TV service. And it's my dad opened the TV, tried to watch Women's Brabantsappel. It's not available. I've hated every single broadcast that was related to Proximus in the last 4 years. Scheldeprijs, Brabantsappel, all those women's side of those races.
Haven't they had some without comms?
Proximus. Yes, 2 years ago they didn't have comms on these races. I don't remember if they had it last year or not, but come on. And it's also, I feel like it's also the responsibility of Flanders Classics to make sure that their coverage of their women's races then gets distributed to areas. I think Proximus might be host broadcaster here, so maybe they just didn't find anyone to sell it to? Is like, there has to be someone interested in that. No, like, Sportza must have been somewhat interested in Women's Brabantsappel.
Honestly, why not? It's pretty, it's got following it, and like, it's got two of the biggest guns at it. I don't know.
I don't know, I just... I just want better coverage of Brabantse Scheldeprijs, those women's races on the in Belgium. Every other country is happy because it doesn't happen there, but here the coverage was shit.
Yeah, I didn't realize because, yeah, to me, it didn't make much of a difference.
And but yeah, Giro Abruzzo was on TV instead.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, the style is not so good at Abruzzo, but yeah, it's a 4-day stage race that they moved up from Sicilia. UAE come with the strongest team by far with Sivakov, Adam Yates, but of course Yates is coming back from the concussion in the UAE, as well as Jan Christen, who was very strong in Trofeo Laguelia.
Yeah.
Pozzo Vivo here, Tudor, George Bennett for Israel, as well as Richard Tello for GC, and Lutsenko for Astana. I think he won GC at this race when it was in Sicily, that is, last year. And stage one was a sprint. I think, what's his name? I shouldn't call him what I called him before. His name is Zanoncello. Enrico Zanoncello on Bardiani.
Why shouldn't you call him what you named him before?
No, I actually called him Limoncello.
I opened my fucking DMs yesterday and he said Limoncello on the stage. And I was like, who the fuck is Limoncello?
I also thought that as a hilly stage, we beat Malucelli, Penalva, Max Cantor fourth on Astana. That was a sprint. Zanoncello is the
Mareshko Rupov.
He's like me, yeah, he's like Aldi Mareshko.
Whoa, you're going far down if he's already Aldi Mareshko.
Well, yeah, he has like he's only won one stage of Qinghai, like,
yeah,
Mareshko's won like 12. And then today was sort of a medium hilly stage, not that difficult, but it ended up being quite open. And Jan Christen, UAE played their numbers in a reduced group and he went solo, winning 16 seconds ahead of Lutsenko and Picenti on JCL team Yukio, continental team. So also finishing in that group was Paul Double, Bennett, Sivakov, Pozzo, Voisard on Tudor and Reichenbach, and Adam Yates, the names you'd expect. And so Jan Christen, 19 years old, just took his first pro win. So that's why I wanted to mention it. Just mark that down. Mm-hmm. Yeah, second at Milano Torino, fifth at Laguelia. He's clearly a super talent, Christen, and he's going to do big things. And he signed till 2028, the end of 2028, for a reason. And he's just another one from the UAE talent factory.
So this race is being brought up instead of Sicilia last year. But I feel like when looking at the style, is yes, UAE is here with Adam Yates, but it's kind of he's only here because he's coming back from something. Is how, yes, I perceive his present.
I'm Astana surprised here. Yeah. More guys aren't here for the Giro because actually they, you know, Prati di Tivo's in the Giro, yeah, this year.
Exactly.
They do that tomorrow.
I've got this vibe of like maybe it's a branding issue. As in,
I would rather do this than Tour of the Alps.
Giro di Sicilia might have been more known in the past and now Giro d'Abruzzo is being brought in and doesn't have that name. And
but this is a temporary replacement because Sicilia couldn't get the money to go forward this year. This is a last-minute race. Yeah.
Okay.
But I would rather do this than Sicilia. Like, it's in mainland Italy, easier to get to one, maybe. And then you have Prati di Tivo, 15K 7% tomorrow, which is in the Giro.
How many times can a human ride up Etna? Come on. Every year it's Etna.
Many times. And then the final stage on Friday is a hilly stage, which will kick off and UAE will win that stage for sure. Jan Christen will probably win on Friday.
Yeah.
Yates, if he's in good shape, will win tomorrow. But yeah, that's all that's around the traps. There's no other news that I can think of, Benji. We'll be back on Sunday, I think, for the Amstel Gold Race recap, the men and women's race. So really looking forward to that. And I hope you enjoyed this Brabantse recap. We'll see you then. Ciao.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.